It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome in to another episode of Hockey Royalty Live, the official podcast of HockeyRoyalty.com. We just ended November hockey for the Kings. What are the storylines coming to December? How did the month fare for us? Return of the King is the fanatic for today. Around the Pacific, PLD impressions, and the big surprise that Joe tweeted out earlier. Get in the chat, like and subscribe. Let's go. All right. All right. So, well, welcome in, guys. Welcome in the chat. Russ, you can mic muted here there, buddy.
Sorry, folks.
Here we got some Kings hockey to talk about. Thank you guys coming in. Early risers in, like straight after I posted the video was going on, coming in here at 1:27 p.m. So getting an early start there. Shank Master coming in. Let's talk some LA Kings hockey. Go Kings. Go. Kubiak and give him the party rock sign. Carter scores. Let's go. Richard coming in here. Go Kings, go. Let's get this fucking party started, Shank Master. They're late again. Let's go. Hey, I have a reason for that. In a second. Sure, the men are going to show. Yeah, we are here. We're ready to go. Holden 92, what's up, guys? So we are talking about it, trying to get everything set up. Normally we get on a little bit early and talk about how this thing is going to go. But there was a car accident right in front of me, literally 200 yards away from my house. Car flipped over. You know, I'm not going to call myself a hero like Joe is, but, you know, pried the sunroof door open to get the guy out of the vehicle. I had to talk to PD and fire department and everybody and their mom, insurance companies, all this kind of stuff like that to get the story straight because I was the first man on the scene. But, yeah, that's what I was late, and so we didn't really have a chance to huddle up before this episode. So apologize for being late, but we have a great episode in store. I told the boys that I was stoked about this episode, so we are ready to go. We got some surprises, great content. But before we get into all that, JP, what's going on, buddy?
You know what, Randon? I'm doing pretty good. I for those if you can't tell, I'm a little hoarse right now. I've been battling a head cold and a cough, so apologies in advance, but I'll try to have a quick trigger on that mute button today. But otherwise, not too bad. Randon, I was telling you before, high school team's off to a good start, 3-0 to start the season. So we're buzzing. A couple of big ones coming up this weekend. So off to a good start there. And, you know, Kings are, you know, tough loss the other night, but that's okay. Overall, good start for them too. So, Russ, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Doing good. Kind of getting used to this one game a week schedule. I feel like I'm rooting for another football team. I guess it's better than my other football team I root for. That just gives me constant depression. But yeah, I'm doing good. Kings are playing well. Besides, like you mentioned, that loss last night. But yeah, it's been overall pretty good. How are you doing, Randon?
I'll say this though. That this like little break here, like of breaks between games, has allowed me to get caught up on, because I remember I told you I was going to tackle that zone entry project, and I had to go back like probably 15 games to start the season. So I'm good to go now. So that's helped me get caught up with the tracking at least. So that's been good.
You know, some breaks right now, but we have three games in hand. So they're going to make that up. We're going to have some games to get back in hand. But you know what? I think that we're going to get started off here with a surprise. And you know, Russ, I can't help to notice, you know, you're pretty good fashionista there. You got the Dodgers hat. You got the nice little overshirt, but that bright white shirt underneath you, what's going on with that, buddy?
Yeah, it's Hockey Royalty's got some clothing that we want to do.
Yeah! All right.
Little Trevor Moore action. Yeah, we thought we'd spice it up a bit. You know, we've been talking about, had a lot of people reach out to me saying they want to get some Hockey Royalty shirts and kind of help us out a little bit. So we thought we'd put together a nice little design, kind of show our appreciation for the hometown kid that is Trevor Moore. So shirts are going to go on sale. They're going to start at $30 a shirt. Shipping is free. We're trying to figure out all this. So it's kind of our first dive into clothing, right? We tried to do it a little bit at the beginning when we first started the brand. Didn't really go too well, but we're trying to figure out some new things. But yeah, shirts came out great, and we're excited to show them off. So yeah, looking forward to shipping them on out.
So yeah, so it's what we did is did the California logo, obviously, with the King crown and the number 12. Right where Thousand Oaks is supposed to be. So, you know, we're not just throwing the T Moore face in your grill. We're doing this for Kings fans. We're doing it for people who love this team and know what's going on. And then we got the Hockey Royalty. You know, you got to know where you listen to your podcast, get your Kings news at the top. We are doing small to XL. I understand. already people here, hey, what's XL? What is this? The '80s and all this kind of stuff like that. I get it. You know, I love my beer and my cheesesteaks too. We're trying to figure this out. They charge us per size. They charge us all this kind of stuff. So, hey, we're just trying to get this in here. This might not be the last iteration of this shirt. We got definitely, ways to go about it. We'll talk about maybe special orders, you know, as far as, Trapper, I'm a 4XL here. We'll just talk about special orders in the future. But we're really trying to just kind of see where this lands, how easy it is to order this kind of stuff in mass bulk. Because right now, like, I ordered a shirt off this third party site and they're like, oh, we make it to order and I'm waiting 2 months for my shirt. Right. Yeah. So we don't want that to happen. We want to have this all up front. And so this is kind of just like our dip in the toe or our tip of the toe into the pool of the fashion stuff. So I get it, Trapper, you know, small to XL. What is this? The '80s, you know, I'm an XL 2XL man myself. I got to get on the trip, my ice bath to get into this XL, but that's what we're starting with right now. I understand if that doesn't fit where you're at, but $30, that includes shipping, men's size, small to XL. Orders, you're going to go to contact@hockeyroyalty.com. So what you're going to do is order through the email. Russ is going to verify that we have those shirts available. He will respond to you saying that that is a valid order. And then you will Venmo Hockey Royalty at Hockey Royalty. Further in the process, maybe we get a website going, make it easier for you guys. But right now, this is what we got going on. So please bear with us. We're trying to get you guys additional stuff besides the podcast going on. So I appreciate you guys. We got the aliens coming in here with the feedback here. But we appreciate you guys listening. We're trying to get some extra stuff going here for you. So
yeah, we'll have more details on our site and we'll tweet it out and everything like that. But yeah, like Brandon said, this is kind of our first tip. We tried it on third-party sites before, and it was whatever. I didn't really like the quality. So, you know what? I went out, found my own screen printer down the road here. Good designer. We'll see what goes on, and maybe we'll have some more shirts coming out to you soon.
And what better way to start it off with a Trevor Moore shirt, right?
Right?
I think that it's very fitting. For the start to the season, he's had. I may or may not have had some input in trying to have the 12 be like a little bit more bold, just to go back to my bold prediction for Trevor Moore. Maybe, maybe not. But either way, really excited. The shirts look great. Love the four in blue and gold combo as well. So I'm fired up about it.
Yeah, Joe wanted his entire prediction stat line on the shirt, so we had to tone him down a little bit. And hey, like, let's make this a little bit more secretive. If anybody didn't hear, we got the shirts available. Obviously, you see it on the screen. Appreciate you guys coming here. Jason Wintergreen, been waiting since I saw the mock. Yeah, he got a little sneak peek. They're here. So get on contact@hockeyroyalty.com to order your shirts there. Jayla, I have some killer biceps. Like that I can't see it on the videos. Maybe I can fit in one. Hey, you know what? Stretch them out, you know, get it going, cut a little seam in it. You know, your muscles know no bounds. Lieb coming in here. Hey, guys. Jason saying, what's up, Lieb? And then they had a little man crush thing going on for a little bit.
Yeah, and also, depending on the demand, like we said, it's small, extra large is what we start off with. Depending on demand, we'll order more. We'll get bigger sizes, whatever, smaller sizes. It doesn't matter. I mean, this was, like I said, we're doing this with our own money. kind of our own investment to kind of help out the brand, see what we could do with that. But yeah, if the demand is high, we'll get some more for you guys.
That's it. First run. Absolutely. And then maybe we go some, you know, silver and gold and all that kind of stuff like that. We'll get other stuff going on.
We got some really cool designs in the works, by the way. Some really, really cool ones.
Everybody knows I want to get a Clark Train t-shirt out there eventually. get a full conductor's outfit that I can wear on screen at any time. So that's what we're going on. Again, sorry for the technical difficulties. I don't know what's going on here with the connection. So I apologize for that. But let's get straight into it. Big news around the Pacific. So we'll start with around the Pacific here. Zadorov traded from Calgary to Vancouver for a third and a fifth, a future third and a future fifth. The fifth is going to be the highest fifth in that round, considering that team has multiple fifths. Seems like a cheap price to pay for a defenseman that wanted out already, can help a team. Obviously, Vancouver right now, second in the Pacific in points, third in points percentage, which we will talk about going forward. But obviously in the playoff hunt, what do you guys think about this trade going forward for Vancouver? How does this help this team maybe get over the hump or solidify their self in a playoff spot?
I like the trade for Vancouver. It's kind of like them, I don't know, making a statement saying that this is for real for them, right? It's always felt like with the Canucks, it's like, okay, well, like, it's, what have you done for me lately? It's like a lot of talk, really, looks really good on paper, and then just nothing really come to fruition. I think with the Zadorov trade, it's kind of like, okay, they're making a statement to the league saying like, okay, we're going to start going for this and be a legit playoff contender. I'm like a little confused by it though, because I feel like, I don't know. You look at their blue line. You have Tyler Myers. You have Carson Soucy, Ian Cole. There's not a lot of speed back there. And I don't know. Maybe Kings don't really have that great of speed on the back end themselves either. But they play a really structured game. And we've talked about that on end. And when you add Zadorov to that blue line the Canucks have, I'm just curious to see how that's actually going to flow with that chemistry. Because, I mean, if you look at some of the advanced numbers with the Canucks, they've kind of been a pretty lucky team through the first part of the season. I'm not saying they're not going to make the playoffs. I still think they're a playoff team, judging by how the Pacific is looking, and more importantly, how the wild card is looking. Because, I mean, it looks like you can make the playoffs with just 90 points, judging by how the season's going so far. So I think it's a little bit of an overreaction to like, oh yeah, they just got like a great player in Zadorov. I think he's a good player. I don't think he's a great player, but definitely improves their team a bit.
I'm not like the biggest Zadorov guy, but I think for looking at it, if I'm a Vancouver fan, I'm really excited about this trade because they had very little beyond the Hughes and Roenick pairing. I'm not that big on Cole and Susie's fine. I know he's hurt right now. He's a fine bottom pair. Zadorov adds a different element. I think he's going to slot in nicely on the second pair with Myers. I don't love Myers either, but I think it really helps their depth on the blue line. and I think, I think if what this did is them recognizing they had a weakness, you know, especially after the Soucy loss, they really needed to address that. If they're a team that wanted to stay in this for the duration, then they needed to go and make a deal. And I thought they did that at a cheap price, really. I thought they got a good middle pair. You know, he's a four defenseman, maybe 4-5 type of defenseman. I think he's like one of these guys that's probably better than your average bottom pair. Like he'd be a really, really good bottom pair, maybe a lower end middle pair. But again, I think that's perfectly fine for Vancouver. I know everybody talks about needing big defensemen, so I guess we just give Vancouver the title now, right? They got Myers and they got Soucy and they got now they have Zadorov, so I guess you don't need anything else but big defensemen. So let's just, why do we just wrap the season up, Brandon? What else do we need to play for? They got the big defenseman.
But I mean, so they got Quinn Hughes. He's top five in the league in points, and that's not defenseman. Yeah. He's top five in points. So they got some puck movers. They got people finally putting the puck in net. They were a little goal starved last year, as well as not getting goaltending. So they're getting a little bit of goaltending. I mean, in this kind of thing. And hey, as much as you want to say it's luck or advanced stats or this and that, sometimes people find ways to win, and they're finding ways to win right now. And so I think that you look at this team. And last year, we were wondering, like, why why weren't they winning? Like, why weren't they winning? Like, they have all this firepower. They have one of the best forwards in the game. They have Quinn Hughes. They have all these guys. Like, why weren't they winning? And it was mainly goaltending. And so goaltending's back on and is playing well. So, you know, I'm not crowning them as any sort of cup contender, but when you're throwing third and fifth round picks, I mean, the third round pick is, you know, I mean, we're going to have a new president by the time the third round pick is available. So, yeah. So, I mean, like, what are we really talking about here at this point? So it's a no consequence move for Vancouver. If it works out to where they get a solid top four D, it works beneficial for them. If not, it is what it is. Zadorov gets to go to a place that's in a playoff spot, gets the chance to take a deep breath and reevaluate his season. There's really no downside on Vancouver, in my opinion. Calgary probably could have held out longer in the trade talks and maybe by the deadline gotten a second or something like that. Maybe it wasn't worth the locker room cancer that he was. And that's just me saying that because he openly asked for a trade. Generally, when a player does that, everybody else knows what's going on, and you see what happens there. So, I'm not crowning anybody anything. It's not really there. But you look at let's just wrap this up to the Kings here. Like, we all thought that the Kings needed to get a puck moving defenseman in Chychrun. They got Gavrikov, and he was the exact player that the Kings needed at that time for the system that they ran. And I'm not 100% familiar with Vancouver's system, but maybe Zadorov is that same type of player that, hey, he's going to fill a need and he's going to be the type of player that they need. And they have so much firepower up front that they just need the back end to play adequate and block shots for their goaltender. And that's it. So am I thinking it's a home run move? No. Is it a no consequence move? 100%. So that's kind of where I'm at with the whole thing.
Yeah. I think the thing with the could they have gotten more at the deadline? I wholeheartedly believe that they could have. I just don't know if they could have waited. Like, if he's gone public with it, clearly he's not happy. It may be best just to move on as quick as he can and just rip the Band-Aid off. So I kind of understand that. Back to Vancouver for a second, though. Like, I know there's been this constant barrage of, like, they're going to fall, PDO, this. They're so lucky. I mean, yes and no. Like, are they going to play at 120, whatever their pace was, 120-point pace? No, probably not. But, like, the Kings have the sixth highest PDO in the NHL. So are the Kings going to fall apart too all of a sudden? What's going well for Vancouver, what makes it believable for me, it's their stars are doing the – Patterson is scoring. There's no reason that should slow down. He's a star. Quinn Hughes is producing. No reason that should slow down. He's a star. Thatcher Demko is healthy. We've talked about Thatcher Demko on this show for a long time. Thatcher Demko is a top 10 goalie in this league when he can actually stay on the ice. His issue is staying on the ice. He's on the ice. He's healthy. So when you put all that together, then you sprinkle in maybe a little bit of puck luck, like Brock Besser is finding the net a bit. JT Miller is finding that a bit more. Their power play's clicking. You start to do some of that, then okay. Then you jump out to a massively good start. But this team, they're real, right? They're real in the sense that they're not just going to fall off the face of the earth because PDO says they're going to fall off the face of the earth. They're here, and I think they're going to be okay. Carter scores. That's not a dumb question. It's a legit question. And PDO is not a perfect metric. So PDO is a shorthand for quote unquote luck. Basically, all it does is it adds a team's save percentage and their shooting percentage. And generally speaking, if you're at the top of that list, meaning you're getting all the saves and all your shots are going in, more or less. So, and again, but if you have a really good goalie, which they have, and if you have your stars are performing as stars, which they are, you might carry a decently high PDO. I think that's conceivable. So I'm not, you know, I was down on Vancouver coming into the year, but their stars are playing well. They've got a healthy Demko. This is a team to you know, that you got to consider the Vancouver Canucks at this point.
It's so weird though, because it's the same team from last year with even without Bo Horvat too. I mean, you lost a player, a great player in that, and then one of the players that you got in that trade, you just traded away in Beauvillier. So. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to see how Rick Tocchet has really kind of turn this kind of around for the Canucks, but I want to turn this to Calgary because, man, I mean, as much as I love watching the Flames just go up in flames, I mean, Zadorov just totally screwed them here. Totally screwed them. I mean, that demanding a trade at this time, especially when everybody knows you're going to get traded at the deadline, like you couldn't even wait. You had to put out that trade demand and then pretty much force the Flames' hand to trade you, as opposed to just, okay, like we can just wait to the deadline when everybody's desperate, people know what they need, and now we'll try to get as much as we can in terms in your return. And now all of a sudden you're only getting a third and fifth round pick for a player that probably could have got at least a second round pick, maybe even a first at the deadline. I mean, damn, if I'm a Flames fan, and especially getting traded to Vancouver, you have to watch Zadorov play against you guys, and probably, I don't know how many more times we have to play this season, but now we have to watch him in our own division. Like, dude, I'm pissed if I'm Calgary right now, looking at that return, knowing that's probably, I mean, hopefully they get something better for Hanifin, because he's probably the next one out the door. Because if they don't, I mean, I don't know what the fuck they've been doing these last 2 years.
Does this smell total rebuild to you? Because it smells total rebuild to me. Usually the first piece for a total rebuild is a small chip for nothing. Bro, and people are like, bro,
they should have rebuilt when Tkachuk demanded he wanted out. They decided that they should have, they decided they want to go for it. I get it. You have a fan base that's just like, how are you gonna appease the fan base when you're all two of your star players that you just went to, you had a long playoff run against, the Battle of Alberta just took place. So you see Edmonton doing pretty well, and then you lose to Edmonton, and all of a sudden you're stuck with Tkachuk, who wants out, Gaudreau just left, and you get Jonathan Huberdeau in return, Mackenzie Weegar. You're just like being super desperate. And it was a team that you're just trying to fit pieces together that had no chemistry going into the season. And sure enough, they don't make the playoffs. And now they're just looking toward going to rebuild. I think there are a few people like, on top of that, you give Huberdeau eight years at $10.5 million a year. I mean, I don't know what the Flames have been doing. And then Trevling got fired and then he went to Toronto and now he's blowing them up for some reason. I don't know. It's just, I'm loving it because as a Kings fan, I think it's hilarious. But, yeah, I think the Flames, just to kind of round it out, I think they need to head to a rebuild fast.
I think they got plenty of pieces to do that. I mean, even Huberdeau could find a location. If they really wanted to sell it, like, you're talking about a guy who had 100-plus points or close to multiple times. Like
you're talking about a guy who had 100-plus points playing with Sasha Barkov. He hasn't
had that. That's not that. He didn't play with Sasha Barkov.
That's what everyone
sees. But I'm saying, If you take 50% of that salary, you could easily get a first round pick for having 7 years at $5 million.
You're eating 50. I don't know.
You want to go full rebuild? Let's tear down to the studs and let's go full rebuild. Like apparently this guy in the NCAA right now, Cicerone or whatever his name is, the number one suspect overall pick is not generational like Bedard, but he's supposedly setting records. Yeah.
Oh, celebrating. Yeah.
He's setting records. So, like, why wouldn't you just
they're
like,
not gonna take?
Well, so
you sure
so,
if they sell everything off,
they're not that bad. And here's the thing: I don't think, and I think it's been talked about. I don't agree that they should have rebuilt. I disagree with Russ that they should have rebuilt at the time. You just went to the division. You just won the division. You took a run in the playoffs, and if you have, are you capable enough to you go replace Tkachuk and Gaudreau with Huberdeau, Weegar, and Kadri, that is not bad. Now, I don't think it could have – I don't know that you needed to give Huberdeau a contract like that before he stepped on the ice for you, but the trade itself, I thought they did pretty well, and I really don't think anybody could have foreseen what the hell happened to Jonathan Huberdeau. I don't think anybody should have, and Calgary shouldn't have expected a 100-point player, but to go from – that to 50,
what has happened
to Huberdeau, I don't know. There might need to be a book written about what's happened to Huberdeau in the Calgary Flames the last couple of seasons. So they're in one now. I don't know that this means a total rebuild, Brandon, to your question, because it's tough to do when you've got the Huberdeau and Kadri contracts, but I'd be curious to see where they go. I imagine Hanifin gets dealt at some point, but it's really fascinating to me because they got rid of what was supposed to be the problem in Daryl Sutter, despite them playing really well under Daryl Sutter. So I don't know that that was actually a problem. I just think some guys don't like the hard coach, and maybe he wore out his welcome. But it's obvious. And actually, I think they're hovering around 500. I don't think
they're only 1 point out of a playoff spot.
Yeah, I don't think it's been like a horrid start to the season for them by any means.
So they're 9-10-3, 21 points. The Kraken, Coyotes, Predators all have 22 points.
Yeah.
The Blues, who lead the wild card, have 23. So they're not out of anything here. It just seems all the teams that I mentioned outside of the Kraken are playing above what we thought. The Kraken are playing a little bit down. And so, like, it doesn't feel good for Calgary. And so maybe that's why I'm thinking, hey, tear it down to the studs. You know, maybe that's just the A's in me, because it's ingrained in my life that we never pay our players. It doesn't seem good. Like,
no, it doesn't. It doesn't. Especially when you got
to, if Calgary was a playoff team right now, if they won the wild card, because they're only one team out, and the Kings were playing them in the first round, would we even be remotely scared? Like, no, I wouldn't
probably, be. Probably not. No. I mean, so, if you're asking me today, no.
I am asking you today.
Yeah, I guess that's true. You are asking me today. But like, Markstrom's playing better this season. I wonder if they'd take this to say, we're going to get him out because he wants out. And then let's take a breath here. Let's see how this next month goes and see where things kind of shuffle. Like, I'm not saying they're going to be buyers by any means as we approach the deadline, but we'll see how things can go. We'll see if things change. But again, it's not like they're a bottom feeder team. They're actually in a probably pretty bad spot, because they're kind of in that middle ground and they've just sold a piece. So I don't know what direction they go in here. But I don't think it's a total rebuild at the moment. I think it's
I'll say this with the Flames, and it's already happened. I mean, you can't go back and redo the Kachuk trade. I think just kind of go back to that real quick is I think that trade kind of just opened everybody's eyes just how good Matthew Tkachuk really is.
Yes.
Because nobody really understood how much of an impact that player has on that.
Is he the best American player right now?
No.
I probably would take Eichel over him. Maybe Hughes, but he's up there.
He's in the conversation, but
I would say he's definitely the best American-born player right now.
With Eichel, with Hughes, and Matthews,
That's the only one that I forgot about Matthews. So yeah,
Trevor Moore. I mean, this is tough.
Matt Roy
conversation. Real quick, before we move on from Calgary, I want to go really just tie up Vancouver. Because Russ, I think you made the comment like we're going to say that we're for real now. We're going to address our holes, address our needs. Vancouver should trade for Sean Walker. Put him on the right side next to Zadorov.
Philadelphia is doing good with him. They're trying to make the playoffs right now. What are you talking about?
They already made the playoffs.
I don't know where their PDOs
are. I'm going to be curious to see how much worse Calgary is after this trade. Because I just been a random kind of clowning them a little bit. I don't think this makes them that much worse.
I don't disagree.
You'd be surprised if they gets to a point where they make a wild card.
Because if you take Zadorov off of Vancouver right now, it's going to hurt them because they have their D's not very good. But Calgary's, I think they're fine still. I think they're fine on the back end. So
yeah, I mean, we're talking about, like you mentioned, we're talking about a middle pairing defenseman,
for Vancouver,
And Leap comes in here and says Hughes, Matthews, then Trevor Moore, Mikey Anderson, Matt Roy, then Tkachuk, then Eichel, then Mazat.
I don't know
who the other Tkachuk brother is, but I think that list is pretty solid. So let's get into this here, because we talked about it ad nauseum earlier in the month, and it was brought up on a broadcast for what the standings look like at American Thanksgiving and how they are relevant to actual playoffs. 60%, right? Well, we're past American Thanksgiving. Hope everybody had a great holiday and got to spend well time with your family. But right now you're looking at it and there's a stranglehold on the top three, right? Kings are right there at 29 points. We'll talk about points percentage, but there's only three teams in the Pacific that have a positive point percentage. Everybody else is under 500. Kraken, Flames, Ducks, Oilers, Sharks. Are the Oilers a team that need to break it up? Like, are they a team that can get out of that that hole, or because that's what the whole podcast we talked about last time, they have to make a move. They didn't make any moves. They're still a bottom feeder in this division. Is this just time for them to blow it up, or they need to just get rid of pieces that aren't McDavid and Draisaitl and kind of go from there? Like, how do you feel about the Oilers?
I mean, the Oilers did the only thing they could do right now in terms of making the change. And that
looks like Russ is frozen. I imagine he's gonna talk about
let's answer Troy Miller's question here. I feel like Thanksgiving's too early marker. Standings don't mean a lot. Well, they do. Statistics say otherwise. Last 20 years, 60% of the teams that are in the playoff spot as of Thanksgiving make the playoffs. That's a pretty high marker. I mean, I'm not a D student, but that's still, I mean, you're a betting man, Joe, right? Yeah. If you were right now, if you were looking at the playoffs, would you bet the Kings would make the playoffs right now? If you were to give in a bet?
The Kings?
Yeah.
Yes, 100%.
Would you bet that the Vegas Golden Knights would make the playoffs?
Yes.
Would you bet that Vancouver would make the playoffs?
Yes.
Okay, so.
But what I would also bet that Edmonton would make the playoffs.
Okay. Well, you probably make some pretty good money there. So
that's where I thought you were going with that. Because I think they make the playoffs still.
So I don't. Okay. I think they're done.
Okay. The thing with the Oilers is they do have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams that they would have to leapfrog in order to do so. But when I look at the teams ahead of them, Anaheim, they're not going to buy. If anything, they sell. I just don't think Seattle has enough. Calgary, I think we've talked about here. They're probably going to be sellers. Arizona's an exciting team, but I don't think they're going to be doing anything too impactful. And like, I think Edmonton, who's only 5 points back in Nashville, I think they can catch Nashville. So there's a lot of teams that got to leapfrog, but I think Edmonton.
I think their goaltends are frauds.
Skinner, I think Skinner settles in, though. I think Skinner settles
in. No, you keep saying that. I don't.
Okay.
All right. We'll make a bet right now.
What's the bet? Yeah.
Okay. So we already bet another bottle. We'll just do a bottle again. Okay. Under 50. Okay. I'll say that Edmonton does not make the playoffs, and you get Edmonton makes the playoffs.
I say Edmonton makes the playoffs.
Yeah. Gentlemen's agreement.
Gentlemen's agreement.
All right. Cheers.
There it is. Yes.
So I just think that sometimes dysfunction is dysfunction. The Angels, Los Angeles Angels, right, have two of the best players in baseball. They can't figure it out in a year. Sometimes dysfunction is dysfunction. And I firmly believe that there's a cancer in that locker room. There's a cancer in that organization. They can't get over the scrutiny that comes with the Canadian market. McDavid, every single interview looks upset. Like, he's not like, hey, we're going to get out of this. We're going to fix this. Like, it doesn't seem like anybody else in that organization wants to do anything. I think firing the head coach was preemptive just because the fact that, like, they needed to do something. But sometimes if you do something for the sake of doing something, it doesn't mean it's the right thing. Like, I just don't understand. There's no strand other than McDavid's the best player on the planet that leads me to believe that Edmonton has anything to do here.
Well, and yet they've won 3 straight. They're tied. They're looking like they're going to at least pick up another point tonight. So maybe some things we talked about, quote unquote, luck with the Vancouver Canucks earlier. On the other side of the coin, Edmonton was the unluckiest team in the league. They had the lowest shooting percentage, the lowest save percentage. They were among the worst in the league in both of those, and they still are, frankly. So do you think McDavid and Draisaitl and Kane and Hyman and Nugent Hopkins are going to be this snake bit for this long? I don't.
No, but I think the goaltending is going to be as bad.
And that's
and look, at the Kings last year. They were scoring points and their goaltending was garbage and they were okay.
Yeah. If they're
okay, that's not enough to get you out of a trench.
Because
all those other teams are to win games too.
I am just more a believer in Stuart Skinner than most. He's had obviously a bad start to the season, but I think he's settling in a little bit. I don't know what his numbers over the last handful of games or so, but I think the Oilers are good enough to go on like a run, like a 12, like a Kings 13-3 type of stretch. I think the Oilers can put one of those together. And if you do that, I mean, you're going to be right back in business when the standings are still relatively tight. So I'm with you though, that it is kind of fascinating that the statistic about the American Thanksgiving, because it is kind of an early benchmark, but it is fascinating. But
60% is 60%. And that's always one over two decades.
Well,
yeah.
But so look at the standings though. Look at the teams in the Western Conference that are not in the playoffs right now.
Let's do Western Conference here.
Okay.
I agree with you. Like, so
who do you think
there's eight teams that make it.
Yes.
Right? 60% is roughly 2 to 3 teams that drop out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So right now we have Colorado at 30 points.
Yeah.
Dallas Stars at 28. They're Winnipeg at 26.
I think Winnipeg makes playoffs. I said that at the start. I think they do.
Golden Knights 32, Vancouver 31, Kings 29. Now, where I will give you and play wild card is playoffs.
Yes.
Maybe it's just a wild card.
Yes.
Maybe those top three teams in each of those divisions are that good and it's just a wild card. And where I will concede to you where their chance at making the playoffs is I look at the wild card and I'm not confident in any of those teams.
Exactly. That's where I'm
at. But I still think dysfunction is dysfunction. They're not a team that is built to win right now. Well, they don't have the mentality to win.
But is it dysfunction? They've just rattled off four straight. They came back. They were down 1-0 in the third period. They came to score 3 third period goals. They're going to win tonight, pick up 2 more points. Where's that leapfrog them in the standings? 2 more points puts them to 19. That puts them ahead of Anaheim.
Joe, I had the worst vision of all time, and I can find the toilet at night sometimes. So, like, they might be getting lucky. I don't know. Like, you know. But ultimately, when you get LASIK, LASIK is the LA Kings. Like, their vision test looks good. They look confident all the time. Even in the loss last night, they look great. Edmonton does not look good at any facet, even in the last 3 games to me.
But like, it is now 4, by the way. 4 straight.
Okay. Where I will concede to you is that the teams that are competing for them or trying to knock them off that wild card spot, I'm not 100% confident. So that's where I think that they could get in there. I don't think they'll win the division. I think they get in the playoffs via – or not win the division. I don't think they get in the Pacific. I think they're a wild card if they do get in.
That's fair. So do I. I don't think they're going to – this point, because L.A., Vancouver, and Winnipeg have banked so many points and Edmonton is so far back, while it's not impossible, I think Edmonton's path to the playoffs is through the wild card. Yes, that I agree with. But I think they get there.
Okay. Let's get into one more thing here. Obviously, Edmonton, you think is going in. Who is the other team to drop off then? Actually, let's do this. Colorado, Stars, Jets, Knights, Canucks, Kings. Which one of those 6 teams are the team that doesn't make the playoffs?
If you were
to give those 6, because it's again 60%, we're just playing the odds.
The wild cards count.
No, I know. But I'm saying, generally, some team can have that. Just as much as a team can go on a run, team can fall.
This is just an exercise, Joe. Talking one of those 6, it's Winnipeg. If you're going to talk one of those 6, it's Winnipeg that falls off. But I do think that they can be – I think they're the third best team in that division. So I think they make it.
Because that's what Kings fans want to see, because we're all about that Vilardi hate and his American History X type haircut going on that he's got going on there. So, no, I'm just kidding. So, actually, let's get into that. Vilardi, pretty salty coming back from the MCL. I didn't really read into it. I'd be upset with an injury. He just got a payday. He gets a chance to prove himself on a team. Goes out. Cross check was a little low. I get it. And you know, he's dealing with what 10 degree weather rather than being in LA. So did you guys read anything into Vilardi's statement or is everybody overreacting?
I didn't really read into it too much. I think everybody's kind of I thought it's kind of weird for him to come at a player like that or at a former teammate and a former linemate like that in Blake Lizotte. But I don't know. I thought the play was just incidental purely. And so I don't know. I didn't read too much into it.
No, I mean, I don't care at all. I genuinely don't care. Like, it's the guy's probably frustrated. He's been dealing with injuries for a large part of his career. I'm sure he's frustrated. He had to deal with it again. And I mean, I don't know. Maybe him and Blazat didn't get along for all I know. I don't know what their relationship was like in LA. So, I mean, honestly, for a team like the Kings that have started so well at 13-3, like to see Kings Twitter go out of their minds because of a comment that Gabe Vilardi said, like, who cares? Why do we care? I don't know. Like, to me, I genuinely didn't read anything into it. He's probably just a frustrated guy that was hurt, and he's frustrated to miss time again, and emotions are still maybe a little high. Like, I, whatever. That's what I, that was my thought.
I don't even do like, did he didn't call Lizotte a dirty player. He just kind of said that.
He said the play was dirty.
He said he makes the, he does those,
he does those type of plays. Yeah.
I mean,
that kind of comment. Yeah. That I could see how that kind of riles people up, but I mean, I don't know.
Is he wrong? I mean, Lizotte, I wouldn't call Lizotte a dirty player, but he's definitely in the realm of being annoying and being a pest and chipping away and doing stuff that bothers people. Like, I would say that.
Yeah, he plays the game hard.
Yeah,
which you need. Yeah, which you need.
Yeah,
I forget what it was. I watched a different broadcast and I forget what player it was. And he's like, so how does it feel to play on the same line as Marchand, or the same team as Marchand instead of against him? He goes, I'm glad he's on my team. I was tired of playing against him. Like those types of players. I'm not saying Lazada is Marchand, but I'm saying those types of players night in and night out. Like that's just gruesome to play against. I think Lazada, not in the physical sense, not in the dirty sense, but he's tough to play against, especially when you think you're getting a reprieve for a fourth line.
Right,
you get that type of thing. I think, which is good, you know.
I just don't think when you're sitting at 13-3 that you have to give one iota what somebody else says. I don't know. Like if Blake does not want to be mad, he can be mad.
Please, I don't care. I don't think Lazotte cares.
Right, me neither. But
under England or Ungland decleating Vilardi.
I don't know. I'm going to say under because England isn't like going to go looking for it. And
he's leading the league in fights. So.
He is. But for sure, shoot, Vilardi sure as hell ain't going to mess with
drop it
England.
All right. So we're going to get into this here. But before we do that, let's get to our sponsors here at DraftKings. Oops, my DraftKings things went up. So DraftKings, we're talking about our bets here. So tonight you're looking at Avalanche Coyotes 2-2. The over-under is at 1.5, which it always is in hockey. But over-under for total points is 6.5. So are they going to be able to go over that threshold? -120, -110, depending on the over-under there. You have the Stars Flames, again, tied at 2-2. Tomorrow, Sharks Devils. Are you going to go over-under 6.5? Or are you going to take the spread Devils 2.5 over the Sharks? That might be something to look at. So DraftKings is something that you need to get into. So with DraftKings Sportsbook, download the app now. Use code THPN. New customers get $150 instantly in bonus bets. For betting $5 on hockey, that's code THPN only on DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NHL. The crown is yours. Lots of bets to be made, Joe. Lots of bets to be made. But right now, I don't know if anybody was betting on this, but this is time our second called Return of the King. So we got three parts to this segment. All of them are of a king returning to something, whether it's the King's team returning to top form, a player coming back, or a player playing at the level that we expected him to play at. So let's start with Return of the King leading the Pacific. So obviously, points, big thing. At the end of the year, everybody has 82 games. Right now, we don't have 82 games. And so the Kings have three games in hand. Points percentage at 725. Vegas Golden Knights at 696. Canucks at 674. So they are leading the Pacific, they are leading the Western Conference, and I believe they are third in the entire NHL in points percentage. LA Kings back on the top, Return of the King. We are loving this. Outside, even in the last game, we lost. We didn't get any points, but completely dominant this game. This team is firing on all cylinders. They don't have a Lazotte, which I think we're the only team in the NHL complaining about not having a fourth-line center, but he's a major part of this team. The third line really isn't going well, and we'll talk about PLD later on. But this team is is just completely firing. Power play is kicking up. Penalty kill had a streak going on. I think 28 straight penalty kills without giving up a goal. Really can't have much to gripe with. Is this team for real? Do you feel now at the end of November that we are a cup contender? Judge.
It's hard to say otherwise right now. I'm not seeing much right now with where their weaknesses are. Their penalty kills improved. They're getting saves. They're getting contributions from all around the lineup. Their depth at center is so damn good. And they're doing this, maybe Victor Arvidsson comes back later in the season. You know, what an addition to the lineup he is. I mean, I think the question is still a question. I think maybe this is me being a little nitpicky, but I mean, you asked, I think if the question is still goaltending, I still think that's a fair question.
Let's go on that. So is okay. It top end goaltending or is it depth for you?
Both. Listen, would anybody be surprised if Cam Talbot, if something happened or if he just kind of came back to earth a little bit? I don't think so. Of course not. I don't think anybody came in thinking Talbot was going to be a Vezina candidate, which you could probably argue that he is at this point. He's had a really, really good season, start to the season. So, if Talbot falters a little bit, Copley has been up and down this season. So I still think goaltending is, will it hold? It's 20 games. Will it hold for the next 62 and beyond? I think is still a fair question. And after that, then it gets really nitpicky. Like you're looking at, okay, for me personally, I'm looking at where the roster shakes out and areas for possible improvement. It's like, okay, fourth line right wing, and that might improve inherently if Arvidsson comes back, and LD3, which he hasn't been bad. Like he's done his job. Englund has done his job. So is there a player that maybe could do his job and then offer a little bit more on the other side of the puck? Maybe, but it's not as if they have to go out and, there's a glaring need that they have to go fix right now. Right. So I think that's what I look at is, and I'm nitpicking with those two positions. I don't think that they necessarily have to go out and address those in a trade. So I think the questions remain of goaltending, but right now the rest of the roster, boy, they are structured. They're bought in. And it looks really good right now. So barring something happening injury-wise, they look like a team that is built for a playoff run as well.
So I believe the Athletic have them right now, based on all their metrics, at about 7.5% chance to win the Cup. So
say that again. I missed that. Sorry.
7.5%. I believe 7.5%. The last time I saw that the Athletic had them at 7.5% chance to win the Cup. So everybody in the chat, do you think 7.5 is about right? What do you think the percentages of the Kings win the Stanley Cup at this point? Let us know what you think. Let's see if we can bring back in Russell, see what he thinks. Russ, do you think the Kings are Stanley Cup contenders right now, man?
I mean, they certainly look like it. If you look at all the metrics and all the goal differential, I mean, the way they're winning games and the way they're playing, I don't think there's any kind of – I mean, it's weird. Even if you just go back to the game that they lost yesterday, I never got the feeling that they were out of it. I mean, you can sense that, Charlie Lindgren was playing out of his mind. But, going into the second intermission, when they were trailing, I just knew that the Kings would come out and just dominate. Like, it was just not even a question that they would play that the way they were playing. And sure enough, they did, because this is just what they've shown all year. So the only question, I guess, is what Joe said, is if the goaltending can keep up. That's still going to be a question mark with this team because of Cam Talbot, the way he's been playing. Is it sustainable? You're still going to have to rely on Phoenix Copley. And so for him to have that showing, too, was probably giving a lot more confidence to their Stanley Cup hopes. So it's great so far. You want to see them keep it going. I think they will for the rest of the year. But yeah, a lot of the question marks are still going to be goaltending.
So I'm going to play a little devil's advocate. And I was watching – I actually took you guys' advice and watched the Washington broadcast for about a period and a half last night. And first thing I heard was they were talking about the 1-3-1. And they were talking about a player, and he was an ex-player who won the Cup with them. I believe – and it's played against the Kings. Yes.
Yep.
And he was talking about how the 1-3-1 and how teams prepare for it. And he said the Kings are perfectly suited to run that type of defense, and it's a pain in the ass because you have one way to go against it. And the announcer's like, so how do you play against it? He goes, well, if the forward is a defensive liability, you attack the forward. Otherwise, you throw it into a 5-foot square in the corner and hope your guy can get there enough soon enough that the defender doesn't have the time to turn around and find somebody. But you're looking at all the right shot defensemen. He said, Spence has great skating. Dowdy has great skating. Roy is good at his job. So it's like all the players and the way this lineup is, like there's no hole. Once the Kings get up in a game, there's no hole in that defense. And like they just stomp on players' throats. And I'm talking about what he said verbatim, not verbatim, but you know, paraphrasing. But he said it's really hard. Like once that team gets up, or once the Kings get up, it's hard to come back on them. Unless you get crap goaltending, which crap is different than what we're talking about. Cam Talbot's playing out of his mind. But even if he comes back to earth a little bit, the defense should be enough to hold this team up, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I don't think will that be a cup contender? I don't know. But I think at least we'll be a deep playoff contender and be enough to do what's going on there. The second was, in the Washington thing, was the center depth. Yep. The defense up and down. And we'll talk about PLD later and whether he's a true 200-foot forward. But you're talking about Deneau and Kopitar and Lazat and everything like that. A lot of teams are starting to notice that the Kings are really tough to play against consistently, shift after shift after shift after shift. And that's what you need. That's what you need. Because right now you were having 2 days off, 3 days off, 4 days off. But in the playoffs, it's every other night. And are you able to come in night out and play the Kings with that much depth? Most teams are not built for that. And that's where I think the Kings will start catching people off guard, is their depth in the forward group, their ability to come back from any deficit, and the fact that the 1-3-1, once they get a lead, it's almost lights out for almost every team.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, their structure is really good right now. And they are a team that, as of today, looks very much built for a playoff run. I thought it's funny because I actually watched the Washington broadcast too, Randon. I thought that's pretty funny you said that, because like the first period and a half was like they were gushing about the LA Kings. I thought they were very complimentary, talking about how well they were going. Then to your point with Devontae Smith-Pelly. And I thought the Kings, I think it has as much to do with, you know, the time off maybe, but I thought the Kings were good in the first like couple of periods, but I didn't feel like they generated a ton. Like there's a couple of chances. I mean, Byfield had a point blank. I think Kempe had a close one, or, you know, a slot chance, but like the first two periods, the Kings controlled the game, that dictated the game, but it wasn't as if they were getting great looks. I thought the third period, they were really good. And it just didn't happen. You know, you're going to run into that sometimes. Lindgren played really well. So
I disagree. I think there were some great looks. Kopitar could have had a backhand, just missed it. There was a couple shots in the slot wide open that just got on each other's feet. I think there was a lot of opportunities where it seemed like the Kings were making those shots recently.
That's fair.
Yeah.
The other thing to consider too is, you know, everybody, like I said earlier in the show, everybody's all over Vancouver because their PDO is so high. Like I said, the Kings have a pretty up there PDO in the top, you know, almost top five in the league. So if you're going to say that, then, you know, maybe the Kings shooting percentage comes down to earth a little bit, rather than being like, what is it, the fifth highest shooting percentage in the NHL at 5-on-5. So, you know, there may be some that some of that were random, where it's like, you know, they buried those a few games earlier and they missed it this one. You know, stuff like that's going to happen, you know, over the course of the season.
Yeah. So The stat I look at,
Joe, and I know we've talked about PDO, and rightly so because of Vancouver and everything like that, but the one I look at is the high danger chances against. And I think the Kings are number one in that area. So
yeah,
we're talking about goaltending, right? I mean, this is why it gives you a little bit more confidence that Cam Talbot can be sustainable and kind of keep that going, and Copley can come in, because the Kings aren't really giving up those high danger chances and they're getting a lot of them themselves. So I like that stat a little bit more, because it seems like they're kind of defending their own area a little bit.
Yeah, and to be clear, like, that's why I don't necessarily love the PDO stat. That's kind of the point I was making. Like, I don't read a ton. It's a nice little, like, quick barometer about luck, but as you also have to keep unpeeling the layers, and to your point, Russ, I totally agree. When you look at the expected goals, the high danger chances and stuff like that for and against, then it paints a picture of like, okay, yeah, this is sustainable.
Well, let's talk about a stat that isn't, you know, disagreeable. It is the shutout from Phoenix Copley. Didn't allow any goals. That's zero. That's a goose egg. And getting back, so return of the king, Phoenix Copley, rising from the ashes. Well needed for him, obviously. Doubted by all Kings fans, including us. We talked about it on our last podcast. Is it time to go away? Is it time to get Rittich? Is it time to get Portillo? Which, if you're looking at all the stats, playing better than Jasper Wallstedt in the AHL. Just a little side tip there. So
goalies.
Let's talk about this. Has he looked better in the last two games? Yes. Does this give you guys confidence, Russ? I'm going to do this to you, now the Kings have two horses in net to where they can continue having multiple runs and not rely on Copley so much, or not rely on Talbot so much?
I think for the time being, I'm not going to – I mean, yeah, it's looked great. And that's kind of why I pointed to that expected goals against, high danger chances against. I look at that, and that's why when Cam Talbot came over here, he talked about the Kings being a friendly system for goaltenders, because if you look at it, they are. They're the best team in terms of being friendly to goaltenders because they don't allow those high danger chances. And their penalty kill is really good. So, I mean, if you add both of those together, a goaltender can go in that's probably be playing pretty mediocre and get a win. And that's really all that Copley needs to do. We talk about it on end. I mean, just go in there, make the saves that you need to make. The Kings will limit the high danger chances. And you come out of there with a win. And sure enough, that's exactly what the Kings are doing. So, I like what I've seen out of Copley these last couple of games. I do. I'm not going to sit here and say that he's going to keep replicating it because I honestly just don't know. But yeah, I mean, I think it's just kind of like, I think when Copley starts, you just have to be like, okay, if we get a win out of it, it's great. It's total. That's awesome because it really can go either way with some of his play. But I don't know. It doesn't give me a ton of confidence and keep it going for the whole season. But I hope he does.
So Joe, let me ask you a different question there. Let me spin this off here. Russ brought up the high danger chances, and then we talked about last year that he just needs to be good enough to win games. Obviously, the offense is well better 5-on-5 this season. Do you have the confidence then in Copley, maybe not to be the savior of the franchise as he was last year, but to be an adequate enough goalie to where you're not worried about starting him going forward?
I mean, I think Copley can be around a 900 save percentage goalie. And I think that's right around, that's probably a tick below league average these days. Save percentage is down these days. So, you know, I think going, because I think there's a lot of people calling for Rittich. And I don't remember if we talked about it on the show or where it was, if it was in a chat or whatever, but everybody's like, well, bring up Rittich. He's, you know, he's going to be better than Copley. Copley's got a sub 800. And my whole thing was he has played to a sub 800 save percentage in so far in the games going into the season. I would argue the argument I was making was the probability of Copley and Rittich playing and making 27 out of 30 saves in the next game is probably exactly the same. Just because one has a decent save percentage in the AHL and the other one's got a 780 in the NHL doesn't mean anything really for the next game, in my opinion. So I was fine to give Copley a longer stretch of games to really see, because, you know, I think it was too soon to pull the trigger. You know, I was nervous that we may be getting to the point where we're going to get there and that the shoe is going to fall off of Cinderella. But again, I'm not taking a whole lot into these games in that he's going to be – he's fixed. He's fine. Other than I just think, here we go. Like, he's – it's goalies, man. Like, however he go, like, I'm not – I don't think Talbot's going to be a 928 save percentage goalie for the rest of the season. That I just think the Kings are going to have – this is – I don't think you can, like, get married to any one way or the other with these goaltenders this year. Like, oh, my God, Talbot's the savior at 928. Okay, he's played 928 for the first part of the season here. There's 60 games left. Okay, so let's just pump the brakes a little bit. Enjoy it. By all means, enjoy it. Be pumped about it. But be, you know, kind of reserved here. That's how I'm trying to approach this. Is I don't know that Talbot's going to be a 928 all season, but I also didn't think Copley would be an 800 all season. So we're going to meet in the middle, and I think that Talbot will probably settle into a 19s, and you know Copley, you know, pushes, you know, maybe high 890s, and you know I think it's going to be okay. Don't get me wrong, but it's still enough to be, you know, question as you head into playoffs. That's all.
So everybody, Russ is having a little internet troubles within his building in his area, so he's trying to get that back on track there. Richard coming here with goalies are voodoo. And Trapper, I miss Russ. We all do.
We all do.
So before we get into the next Return of the King, I just want to mention this, and we don't like doing this here at Hockey Royalty. We don't like trying to plug ourselves up and everything like that, but we would really appreciate it if you guys hit the like, share our feed going on. We're trying to get into a non-pathetic realm of YouTube going forward. And all that means is more giveaways for you guys, right? So Russ gave away some tickets the other night, which would mean signed jerseys, all this kind of stuff like that. So we want to give away more stuff to our fans, our royal listeners. So any likes, any subscribes, any tweeting or following of our podcast will be greatly appreciated.
We're analytics people here, Randu. Our like to viewer ratio is like 44% for today's show. We have to get that.
If that was Corsi, that's pathetic.
Right? We're struggling right now. We're struggling.
So, and then we also have the super chats on there. So that means you are guaranteed to get your comment or question. So if you want to steer this podcast in a direction, super chats up there, $2, I think is the lowest one. Like I said, we're trying to do more stuff for you guys. This is the way we're doing it. I know that wasn't on the docket last year. We just came up here and talked Kings hockey, but you know what? This is what we're doing now. We're trying to get you guys more involved, and this is the way we're going about it. So
our expected likes percentage is way down right now.
So the last Return of the King, the only Return of the King that matters to Joe, is Blake Lizotte. Blake Lizotte, it is coming in and is skating in a red non-conk jack jersey. He should be ready to go coming soon. Now, the fourth line hasn't been abysmal. Mm-hmm. They've had some good games, had some bad games. Obviously, it's much needed that he gets back. You know, things float around. But how big it would be to get Lizotte back coming onto this road trip coming up?
Yeah. I think Lizotte is, and we've talked about him at length on this show. I mean, I think he's as good as it gets in terms of a fourth line center. And I, you know, not to say that the lines has been terrible in his absence. Although if you look at the last three games, they were, you know, a 30% shot attempts against Anaheim. They had a good, really good game against Montreal, 73%, 41% against Washington. So again, it's not the end of the world, but you're definitely missing an element on that line. I think with Lizotte, that's not in the lineup. He is the best of that group, generally speaking, in terms of like his controlling the zone entries more so, certainly more so than Trevor Lewis, who's just a dump and chase guy. It is what it is. And Kaliev throughout the season has been a dump and chase guy. Lizotte is more so than his controlled, but he's going to at least be willing a little bit more to get into the zone. So I just think that they're missing a little bit more of kind of the way they get into the zone. And I think they're also missing that creativity. They're really not getting Lizotte, as we've talked about, has been like somebody that's in the upper part of the Kings lineup in shot assists per 60. He's a creative player. So to miss him, that's the part they're missing. Like maybe with the existing fourth line, they cannot get killed. Maybe they can control some of the shot attempts, but I think you're going to miss some of those scoring opportunities because of what Blake Lizotte could bring to the table and does bring to the table.
So we got a couple of people here, Lib coming in here, or Lib. Any idea the Kings had decided not to say anything all about Lizotte's timeline? Well, they didn't have to put him on IR, so they don't really have to do anything. They just say he's out and he will be back at some point. Richard coming in here, if Lizzo isn't ready, do we call up Turcotte? That would have happened before Thanksgiving. Right now that he's in actually skating on the ice at practice, I don't think there's any call-up. I think they go with Jared and Nolan. And can we get off his back, please? Like, Jad has had a couple games. He's not playing consistently, and all of a sudden he's expected to be a point per game player. Like, if anybody needs to be hounded, is a guy that's not playing on the fourth line for 6 minutes a night. So, like, let's just kind of move on and like I get it. Everybody wants Turcotte. Everybody wants Fagimo as a goal per game player in the AHL. I get it. But let's just not pile on Jad for him having to fill in and not really getting any playing time. Like, what do you think the defense is going to look like? Like, out of the defense, nobody is filtered in. Am I right? Like, there has not been one game where a different player has played, right? Like,
Bjornfoot played the first game, but that was just because of the cap crunch. Remember, they played shorthanded. Cap crunch, yeah, yeah. That was
so
it.
Yeah. In a normal lineup, nobody has played otherwise. So if there's an injury, like, what are we going to say? Like, oh, you know, Bjornfoot or Mervara or whatever. Like, let's just pump the brakes on the hate for Jack, right? Like,
yeah, I'm with you there. I mean, listen, Anderson Dolan's I think he's a better player than he gets credit for, and I think the reason we're seeing this iteration of Anderson Dolan is because the role he's in. He's a 13th forward, so when he gets in, he's just like, don't make mistakes. Pucks deep, you know, be responsible and play a simple, no, a limit mistake game. Whereas if he was given a longer leash, for example, say next to Blake Lizotte on that line and say, okay, go, we're going to give you a stretch here. Go play. Go do what Anderson Dolan to do. I think you could see a creative player who finishes.
Which we did in the AHL.
Right. And we did in the NHL. Well, remember a couple years ago, he maybe is writing a shooting percentage that was a little high, but like, I think he has that in him of a player that can finish, that has some ability. He was one of the best power play players on the Rain a couple years ago, Randon. Like, and that's not by accident. So there's a player here. It's just, he's in a tough role. So I got no problem with Anderson Dolan. He's the least of I mean, he is to your point, he's a 13th forward. He's being spotted in here and there. He's not, I suspect, not being asked to do a ton other than play a really simple game when he's filled in.
Speaking of tough, Trapper 9 coming here, steering this direction with a super chat. Thank you for the $5. Ginger or Marianne? Let's play a game of get to know the hockey royalty, guys. I'll start this one off. I'm a ginger guy. I like a little bit of the fireball. I like a little bit of the keep me on my toes type person. I think Marianne is the solid Americana type woman. I get it, but give me ginger all day, every day. You know, I want a little spice in my life. And for all you redheads out there, you know what I'm talking about.
So, I don't know. I didn't watch the show.
Joe, people are coming here for better content than that.
So, I got to be honest. So, here, I'll look it up quickly.
So, look, just on looks by himself, you go on Ginger or Marianne?
I mean, I think you're doing all right either way. I'll go with you. I'll go with Ginger, sure.
Yeah. Right.
I don't know. But again, I just pick one. Sorry, Shane.
Yeah. I mean, come on, man. That's what they come here for. They want some solid content. They want you to pick a woman that you know nothing about, and that's solid content by anybody. Shane Master coming here, spicy Trapper coming here, Marianne guy here. Hey, even though Joe was unwilling to pick somebody, he is not wrong that there is no wrong answer here. So let's get into what Twitter's been a buzz lately there, Joe. Is the PLD impression.
Yeah.
Obviously not having a great season so far. On the basic statistics, he's kind of been left for dead with the remembrance of the two lines, right? Laferriere and what I wouldn't say left for dead with Grundstrom, because I love Tonka.
Yeah.
But that line hasn't been great. They had a couple spurts, a couple lapses. So, like, is he worth the $8+ million that he's getting paid right now? Or is the underlying statistics there? Are you going to give me some gypsy numbers that makes me feel better about myself? Like, what's going on here, Joe?
So first of all, to the $8.5 million, like, I don't know that we should be making any determination, whether even if he was scoring point a game, that we should say, yes, for the next 8 years, this contract is worth it, or this contract is not worth it, because we're 20 games into an 8-year deal. So, I would just say any expectation, maybe temper it a little bit from that aspect. So you're right. The production is leaves a lot to be desired. I think that that's where a lot of the frustration comes in, is simply from a production standpoint. I don't know. Whenever I watch him and I watch and I do the tracking for like the zone entries, the guy is an absolute horse. I mean, he is the number one player on the LA Kings in terms of controlled zone entries. And I checked back to Corey Schneider's all three zones tracking data last year. He was 78% carry percent. So carrying the puck in, 78% of his entries were carry-ins. The Kings didn't have anybody last year above 68, and he's doing it again this year. I've got him tracked so far.
For everybody who didn't catch that, Kings last season didn't have anybody over 68% in carry percentage over the blue line. PLD was 78%, so 10% better than anybody on the Kings last season.
And that was last season. So, like, and the point of that being that statistic is obviously if you're controlling the puck into the zone, rather than just dumping it and having to go chase it, there's a much higher probability that something good is going to happen from that shift and that zone entry if you're coming in with control versus not with control. When I look at this year, I've got him at 74%. That leads the Kings. Kevin Fiala is the only other King right now above 70 at 71%. So when I look at that, it's like every time you watch his shifts, watch him through the neutral zone. He's a horse. He gets the puck and he lugs the puck into the zone. It's like, okay, so he's doing that. What I've noticed is his shots are way down. I'd have to go back and look to see what he shot last year, but his shot attempts are noticeably down from where they were a season ago. I'm not sure what the reason exactly is. I mean, he's like 12th on the Kings in shot attempts per 60, which when you consider it's Pierre-Luc Dubois, it's pretty low.
He's ninth in November.
Okay.
So with the line change, he's ninth total.
Okay. And which is interesting because if you think about it, like early in the season, Kevin Fiala wasn't quite the same Kevin Fiala. And actually, you know, his shot assist numbers, he's down a couple shot assists. Fiala himself is from where he was last season. So I don't know. I think Dubois, though, overall shot contributions is kind of middling. So I think he's struggling to connect consistently with line mates. I think he's doing a good job with some things. Like I said, the zone entries, the controlling play, going hard to the net, being hard to play against, being a physical presence. Like I think all that is very, very good. It hasn't yet translated to points. I still want to see him next to Trevor Moore. I think that would really help to elevate his game. Because I still think I'm a Grundstrom fan. I'm a LaFerriere fan. I think I'd like to see a little bit more of a play driver next to him. I mean, you could say that the Kings almost have
the play driver.
What?
He should be the play driver. Well,
but I guess what I'm saying is you kind of have multiple play drivers on every line. Like you look at that Deneau line, and is a play driver. Kevin Fiala is a play driver. And Moore, maybe a little bit less so, but he's got that element to him. Quentin Byfield is driving play. Anze Kopitar is a play driver, right? So right now, Dubois is kind of shouldered that.
Is he the odd man out? You're talking about all the guys you mentioned are all in the top two lines. Is he the odd man out?
I think that's why I think Trevor Moore should play with Pierre-Luc Dubois. I think it really opens up. I think it would really, when you think about the speed that Moore has and plays with, through the neutral zone, but can also get in on forechecks. And then you have the way Dubois carries the puck into the zone. I think having a Moore on his wing with a shooter like Grundstrom or a shooter like LaFerriere would do wonders. I really do. Not to mention, I mean, and again, it's not that I dislike these players, but LaFerriere is a rookie. He's adjusting in his own right. Grundstrom is a 13th forward, fourth line player, now starting to really settle into a larger role, which is great.
Don't talk about Tonka like that, please.
My point is he's himself, you know, really kind of settling into his game. And now you're pairing these two guys that are kind of finding themselves with a guy who's trying to get, you know, find himself with his new team and everything in the new system. So, you know, McClellan talked about it after the last game that he thinks his game is going up. He thinks he's getting better. He thinks he's settling in. And I don't disagree with that. I just would like to see him with I'd like to see him with Trevor Moore. But overall, I guess you asked the question about the contract. I mean, if obviously the production hasn't been there, he's not producing at the level that he should be
on pace for 47 points, which is not
good. Yeah, it's obviously not good enough. I am still not upset about the contract, not concerned about the contract, because I think as he continues to get settled in here, I think he's going to be just fine. And he's doing a lot of things well. Like I said, with the way he controls the puck, the way he controls the zones, he controls the neutral zone. Like, I think he's doing quite a bit right. So I still think there's something. And so I was going at with a shot attempt. So last year, he was 15 shot attempts per 60. The year before with Winnipeg, he was 14 shot attempts per 60. For right now, he's below 12 with the Kings per 60. So there's a noticeable drop off in his shot attempts. And I'm not sure what the reason is. Like I said, it's probably a comfort thing. I think the first part of the season, he's probably him and Fiala.
And his shooting percentage is at 6.5 right now.
Yeah.
So he's not – the shots that he's taking, he's not getting in. So, like, I don't mean to cut you off, Joe. I think this is where I want to go with this. Is he playing at an $8.5 million level? No, he's not. So let's not you know, cushion this up. Or anything like that. He's not. Is he worth the money that he's being paid? No, he's not. But I think there's a lot of things to look at here that give me great hope, right? So IPP is individual points percentage, number one on the Kings. So when he's on the ice and the Kings score a point or score a goal, he is a part of that goal 88% of the time. So when he's on the ice and the Kings score a goal, he's a part of that goal 88% of the time, leads the Kings. In November, it's 100%. So, yeah, he only had 5 points in November, but it was 100% of the time. Every time so his line scored, he was a part of that. So even though – Jesus. Even though that – sorry, with the static here. Even though that he's not doing well on an overall sense – when his line does score, it's because of him. But are they doing it at a high enough rate? No, they're not. Laferriere, for me, the experiment's it's not over, but like he's not helping that team. Like he's gotten flashes and this and that. He's not hurting the team. He's not helping the team. But I'm tired of it not hurting the team. Like, is there another player? Like, okay, let's hypothetical. What if Arvidsson comes back? Don't you like that line? Grundstrom, Arvidsson, PLD? Like, or you put PLD up on the second line, you get more Grundstrom and PLD. Like, I think there's a lot more opportunity here, and I don't think Laferriere is doing PLD any services. I just think that there's a lot of positives in there. There's some negatives for me. He's the lowest center on the team in faceoff percentage. There's a lot of different small analytics within the defensive side of the puck that I think he'd clean up, but that's him as a line. So the offensive side is there. I think the power play isn't meshing with him. Maybe he needs to get off the power play to a second power play or have somebody else find a different role. Because he's top five in power play minutes. He's only got one power play point. So maybe there's something there that on the special teams he needs to find a different home. So he's not overwhelmingly bad, and we need a lot more from him.
Yeah, he has moved back to the second power play, and he is, to your point, Randon, he's second on the team in primary points per 60. So again, it's not like there's at 5-on-5. Clearly, and the thing is too, for a player like him, if you're not producing it on the power play, you know that's going to hurt your overall point production. But yeah, I mean, I think there's positives and negatives, I should say, to even when you look under the hood with him, there's some good and there's some bad. I think there's reason for optimism. I think after 20 games, I'm not bothered by the start, frankly. Obviously, I wanted more production, but I still feel pretty good that it'll come. Again, I think the play is okay. I want to see Trevor Moore next to him.
So, Russ.
That's hard.
It's good to see your beautiful face, man. You blurry for so long.
No, I love technology.
Your beard's top notch. Give us your top notch analysis about PLD. And obviously he hasn't been worth his contract, but where do you want more from him? And where do you think he shines so far in your eye test being at crypto?
To be honest with you, this PLD conversation, I could really care less. Honestly, the team is winning. That's really all that matters. Yeah, there's a little bit of a conversation you can have to some of his on-ice play. They're winning games. And this was a lot of the talk coming into the year is the depth of this team down the middle. And he's a big reason for that. That's why you get a player like this. A lot of people, when you talk about he's not living up to the contract. His contract isn't going to start being lived up to until Kopitar leaves. That's going to be where everybody's going to be focused on at that point. Because right now he's just the third line center. And if this team comes playoff time, if this team makes playoffs, which is looking like they might be, then we'll start talking about PLD on the ice. But for now, I mean, all this like talk about some individual players, I'm glad that the team is winning games and he's contributing to that. But I don't know. I just hate the conversation talking
okay, about well, his let me, and everything. Then let me throw this to you then without money. Yep. Do you think he's taking shifts off? Do you think he's given 100%?
No. 100%? No. No, not at all. I think he's learning the game. And I think that conversation, if it ever comes to fruition, I'm glad like with Tom McClellan say, he's saying it perfectly. Like he's getting acclimated, he's learning to a system. You never want to put it down a player that's trying to like evolve and gain chemistry into this King system. Yeah, it's weird, like because I get where people are coming from with when you watch PL Dubois play, because he just kind of has that like lackadaisical kind of style to his game. I mean, when he has the puck, it's like there's no stopping him. He's just a bull in a china shop. Every time he gets the puck in the offensive zone, and when he wants to take it to the net, he's going to the net. Good luck stripping him from the puck. He's like 240 pounds of just pure muscle that's not going to get stripped. So I'm not really too focused on what PL Dubois has done now. Yeah, I get that people want to see more, but the team is winning games. That's all that matters. They're winning. And I think
his
presence in the lineup is probably a big reason for that.
I want to piggyback off that comment real quick, Brandon, because the presence in the lineup. So I referenced earlier his zone entry percentage at 74%. Like hypothetically, if they had a player that was not Pierre-Luc Dubois, and it wasn't somebody that was his last year, he was that 78% was like Connor McDavid level per Corey Schneider's tracking. And right now this year, he's going at about 74% is what I've got him at. So he's doing it again. Now think, is it translating to points? Not yet. But is it translating to offensive zone time for his lines? Or at least, is it keeping the puck out of his defensive zone? Because what if you had a player that was at a 53% zone entry, controlled entries? Well, now you run the risk of playing more in your own zone, because if you're dumping it in or you're turning pucks over as you enter the zone. So maybe that's a little bit too, you know, nitty gritty of a way to look at it. But when I see a guy controlling the neutral zone like that and controlling the puck into the zone, like, I just think that's a good process. And it's certainly better than playing in the other zone.
So you're not wrong there. And I think it reminded me of the PDO podcast. And we referenced this the last three, or the PDO cast. We've referenced, great, subscribe. They do a great job at breaking down individual players and taught me more about hockey than I ever knew in just 55 minutes watching the Quentin Byfield. And so if you have watched it, the first 35 minutes are about Quentin Byfield, the last 15 are about the Kings. And what they're saying pretty much is that the Kings last season were a zone entry team that went north and south. And now they're going in a diagonal fashion. They're weaving in and out. They trust the player holding the puck to bring the puck in. And they're bringing, almost like a black hole, they're bringing defenders to them, allowing them for off-the-rush chances. And then when they get in there, every single player is strong in the boards to play half-court offense. So what you're looking at with PLD is that his zone entries, he is the black hole. He brings that puck across. Players come towards him. Right now, if you look at the shot percentage for his line, LaFerriere, his shot percentage in the month of November was zero. If you look at PLD shot percentage was 6.67. So that line, whether you say snake bitten or not, he's drawing players to him and they're not finishing. And I firmly believe that if you look at PLD took one of those breakaways in and put in a goal, he'd be a half point per game player for the month of November. And what we wouldn't even be talking right now. But the fact that he is almost invisible the last couple games to the naked eye, and mine included, until I deep dived into what I was going in. Yeah, I want more from him. Yeah, I want to be a point per game player. I want him to come in this, and I get it. Everybody gets it. But if you look at the thing, like, he's bringing defenders in. He's doing this kind of stuff. He's and on the walls. He's effective on the walls. He's taking pucks away. He's drawing penalties. He's top four on the team in drawing penalties. Now, he's also top five in giveaways, and he needs to get better at that. But you're looking at there's a lot of positives that come with PLD. And I'm not going to forgive him for not producing in a raw sense, because he needs to. That's what he was brought in to do. But there's still a lot of stuff that if a few tweaks go the right way, if a few puck bounces the right way, you could be talking about a guy that is lifting this team and carrying this team rather than being a detriment.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. I think that there's things that he's doing well that if he, as long as he continues to do some of these things well, that it should translate into production. I mean, you just talked about last game, how you mentioned that you seemed like it was invisible, and I'm not going to clown you for that. He led the team in controlled entries. He had six of them. Nobody else on the team had six. He had three dump ins. But like, my point is he's still dictating and controlling a lot of the play as he enters the zone. And I know that's not everything, but I'd be more concerned if he wasn't doing that. He wasn't contributing offensively at all in terms of his shots and shot assists, which I do think are down from what he's capable of. I will say that. So I think that if he can start to do that a little bit more, I think the points will come. And I'm just going to come all the way back around to, can we please try Trevor Moore with Pierre-Luc Dubois? Just a couple games, maybe. I'd like to see it.
Go back to last year. How long did it take for us to get to Kevin Fiala to get acclimated to this team? It took him quite a while, right? It's not like it was just, he was put with Kopitar, didn't work out. And then all of a sudden, he got put with, what was it, Grundstrom and Kupari? And then did anybody see that coming?
Yeah.
Was it Kupari and somebody? And then all of a sudden, they started lighting it up. So it's like we're 20 games in, and we're already nitpicking and talking about how he's not worth the $8.5 million a year he's getting paid and all that. Like this is the thing. Is like I just hate these conversations about these individual players when the team is playing some of the best hockey. We're having conversations, too. We're talking about, is this the best Kings team we've ever seen? And yet we're still nitpicking plays like PLD or even like conversations like Jared Anderson Dolan. Like I could give a fuck. I don't care. They're 13-4-3. Who cares? They're winning games. Let's keep it going that way. And if they start losing games, or if those players are a big reason for that, yeah, then we could start having that conversation. I'm loving having a player like PL Dubois in the lineup and this team playing as well as they are right now. But come playoff time, I think we'll see another level of this player on this team.
So right now, everybody thinks he's not playing well. That line's not playing well.
Yeah.
And you're not wrong. But if you look at the stats right now, seven games, expected goals, 50%, two goals for, two goals against. They're right mediocre. And if you look at a couple goals, a couple things plot their way, you don't expect LaFerriere to go zero shot percentage in November. Obviously, the shot percentage was down for Grundstrom in November. So you expect a couple goals to just come their way, or PLD to take a puck all the way into the net instead of just to the net. We're talking about a different line. And I think that, is he worth $8.5 million right now? No, he's not. Is the team winning? Yes, they are. Should we expect more from a guy that you were paying money to? Of course. But right now, I'm glad we're nitpicking at number one in the division, right? Point percentage. Because that's the type of podcast we are. Two, that's what you need to get over the top is where is that little extra fringe, that 1%, that 2% that's going to get you that next level and win you that cup. So, Carter, man, the chat's going live for you, Russ. They were hungry for a little Russ Morgan here. Russ is staying on business. Trapper coming in here, right? You are right, Russ. Trapper 9. Russell. Kubiak SB. Preach, Russell. Preach. Hands
just,
in the air.
I mean, I think it's. I just love that. I mean, this is a good team. It's a fun team to watch. It's like the conversation of this is the best team we've seen. I mean, I was so pissed off that they lost yesterday because I had all these stats I wanted to rile off about how I think they had they would have tied like the franchise best points for the first 20 games, like second most wins that they had 14. But I mean, either way, like statistically, this team is like I watch Kings games and you watch the Kings play and it's just so smooth, so systemic. Everything just flowing right. And like I mentioned, the game last night, going into the third period, you just knew that they would make a push. Like, it wasn't even a surprise to me that they just outshot, like, totally dominated that period. I think there was only two faceoffs in their own zone in the third period for the whole period. So it's, and then you watch other games, and it's like you see, like, the Maple Leafs and, like, the, like, I don't know. I'm just throwing out names and kind of dogging, but. Yeah, it's just I think this is a good team, and we should just be happy about it. And obviously we are, but once we start nitpicking a little bit, talking about a little critical of players too much, I think we can wait on that until playoff time comes around. I know I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but I think Pierre Dubois specifically, his contract will be dissected a lot more once that playoff time comes around because he's definitely an upgrade over Kupari, and he's going to be expected to play like that.
Russell is stacking up the nicknames here. He's getting close to Daenerys Targaryen, the first of her name, the Unburnt, the Queen of the Marine, the Queen of the Andals, and the Rar of the First Men, the Khaleesi of the Great Sea, the Breaker of Chains, and Mother of Dragons. You are almost six nicknames back of being with there with the Russell, the Prince of Corsi, and the Duke of Fenwick.
I try.
Yeah. So let's get into this. Last month we did this here. At the seats at the round table. So this is our segment here for the month, where we give our player of the month essentially a seat at the round table. Because King Arthur, the LA Kings, well, that's what we're doing here. Last month, Byfield was mine. So I guess I'll start up because I went last month. So I'll go first this month. And this month for me, it's Adrian Kempe. And that might be the easy one this month, but in a game, he played left shot D, huge hits. He had plenty of goals. I think he's on, if anybody is any watching any sort of West Coast hockey, he should be in the Selke conversation with his defensive play this season. And I understand that people want more of those one-timers on the power play, but he's scoring goals. Like, he's taking pucks away. He's still driving them on the power play. And he's standing up for teammates. He's getting scruffy out there. He's, you know, jawing with people. I think that Kempe is becoming the player that I thought he was, or more of the player that I thought he was 2 years ago. And he's probably not only one of the best players on the Kings roster, but one of the best players in the NHL.
I love the mention of him for Selke. I hadn't even thought about that. I mean, if Mitch Marner can be a nominee, then Kempe should be a nominee.
He grades out pretty well, and Don LeShizen of The Athletic just releases player cards, and it's been a good start to the season for Adrian Kempe. That's a really good shout, Randon.
So who wants to go next for the giving their player seat at the round table?
I'll go next. I don't think this is going to be much of a surprise, given how big of a fan of his that I am. He led the Kings in goals for the month of November with 6 goals in 11 games. He led the team tied for 6 with Kopitar, tied for the team lead in points with your Adrian Kempe with 11 points, 56% Corsi forward 5-on-5, 55% expected goals, 60% scoring chances, 59% high danger chances. It's Trevor Moore. He just keeps doing it. He's off to a hell of a start to the
T-shirt
season.
Man himself.
Yep, it keeps going. I think it was Lieb throughout sometime over the weekend that I wasn't bold enough, had to go, should be looking at 40 goals for Trevor Moore. I don't know, but he's buzzing. He's doing it in all three situations. I love watching this kid play. And all you got to do is put him next to Pierre-Luc Dubois, and you're going to see an explosion.
I love it. I love it. Trying to hype up the t-shirts. I love it, Joe. I'm going to go a little off the ranch here. Is that the word, the expression? Either way. Off the beaten path. I like that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go off the beaten path, and I'm going to go with Todd McClellan as my.
Whoa!
I think just let's list off some of these moves he's made. Switch Grundstrom and Kaliev. That's worked out. Grundstrom has a couple goals now playing with Pierre Dubois. He sat Alex Laferriere for one game, much to kind of my displeasure, as much as I love Alex Laferriere. Alex has come back and looked like the player he was those first couple games he started in the NHL. And then the Phoenix Copley situation, when everybody was writing him off, he was answering questions about whether he was losing confidence in him. And he said, not a chance. He's played 5 to 6 periods for us. We're going to lose confidence in him? No. And look what he does. He comes back, plays Phoenix Copley. And I just love that whole aspect of them like waiting to get Copley that game again in Arizona. It was almost like a get back for him. Like, hey, that wasn't you. That wasn't your game. Let's get you back out there. And the team kind of rallied behind him. I mean, Todd McClellan, if he's not like the finalists for Jack Adams right now, which I know Jay Fresh kind of released those fan vote rankings, and it's like he was fourth to, I think it was Tocchet, who's the coach in Boston, and then the Rangers coach. Either way, if he's not in the finalists, then all hell's going to break loose with Hockey Royalty, because we're going to start a picket line outside Gary Bettman's house, because that would be a total disgrace. But I just love a lot of the moves that Tom McClellan has made this last month, and it's paid off. And I think he deserves a lot of the credit for this team's success, because it's hard to get new players to come in and buy into a systemic type team or a game that this team plays. You don't get players that come in and just do that right away. And for some reason, players just seem accustomed and acclimate really well to his style. So I love the job that the coach is doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's done a fantastic job. I'll say, like, the Jay Fresh, it was Jim Montgomery and Peter Laviolette. I'll be honest, I don't know, like, that I have a huge issue with any of those three. I mean, Rick Tocchet, look what Vancouver's done. Granted, you know, he's getting some saves and whatever, but so's Todd McClellan. Did anybody think the Boston Bruins were going to still be this effing good? You lost Bergeron and Krejci. They're going with Pavel Zacha and Charlie Coyle's their top two centers, the best team in the league again. That's insane. And, you know, the Rangers are off to a really good start, too. So McClellan being in that with those three guys, I think that's fair. That's reasonable. But, yeah, I think when you look at what he's done, good God. I mean, I think it's been fantastic.
Yeah, we have to give a shout out. I love what Shank Master said. You got to give a shout out to Blake, because that is just overall coming into this year. I mean, a lot of the question mark moves that he's made have seemed to pay off so far. And I guess Andreas Englund being one of them. I mean, that's just a diamond in the rough find.
No.
And a lot of that probably has to do with McClellan.
Yes. Thank you. So, like, Todd McClellan turning Vladislav Gavrikov into, like, one of the best defensemen on earth, and Andreas Englund into usable NHL, consistently usable NHL defenseman on one of the best teams in the league. That's enough for me to say this guy's Jack Adams worthy.
Hey, and one thing I didn't even mention too is the penalty kill. I mean, that was the big question mark going into the offseason, and he took it upon himself to try to figure it out and fix it. And they're what, first, second in the league right now? It's been a crazy turnaround on the PK.
Yeah.
What I'm liking also from T-Mac this season, and not saying that he hasn't done it a lot, he's been very honest with the media and his responses, but it seems like he holds players accountable when they need to be held accountable. He holds back players' names, but still holds them accountable when he doesn't want to throw them under the bus. Like, hey, we needed more from this, and this on the team, but doesn't throw a player under the bus. And then backs up a guy when the big guy needs to get backed up. And no other player on the roster needed to get backed up more than Copley. And the fact that he just came out and said, we have not lost faith in him. He's going to get another start. The team is backing him. Like, those are big statements from a head coach. and like, hey, like, this is like, what are you guys talking about? Like, we are not on the same page as the media. I get it. But like that from a head coach, for me, drives numbers. I think it resonates with me, like the head coach of the Raiders, the one that took over for McMichael or whatever his name is. He said, like, hey, like, all these practice squad guys bust their ass every single week, come in here day in, day out, and they're not on the sideline with the team. That stops now. They're part of the team. They're going to be here. They bust their ass every single week. And that's what I kind of feel like T-Mac does. Hey, all these guys work hard. Like, Copley knows that his play isn't good enough. We're not abandoning him now. He's a part of the ship. And I really appreciate that kind of style of moxie and leadership that T-Mac has been exuding this season.
Well, you appreciate it. I mean, imagine being one of the players. I mean, I can only imagine the confidence that gives a player like Copley or even like Jared Anderson Dolan.
Yep.
I mean, a player that is every practice, first player on the ice, last player to leave, every practice, like clockwork. And sure, he's not the best player. He's a 13th forward at best in the NHL. Sure, there's better prospects that probably should be playing over him, Alex Turcotte being one of them, Samu Fujimo maybe. But it's a player that works hard. Todd McClellan sees it, and he gives him a chance. And sure enough, he's winning games with the players that he's given. So I think he deserves a lot of kudos for how well the team's been playing.
I agree. Well, man, what an episode we had. I know that Russ came in, but, you know, he closed us out. He closed us out here.
Yeah, I think the technology kind of got me a little riled up there at the end.
got the save. Hey, you came out of the bump. You know, you had your walk-up music coming in. You're doing this to the mound. You got on the bump. Got three straight outs, not messing around. Appreciate you coming in and closing this podcast. Everybody else, follow us, please, at @Hockey_Royalty, at @RandomCommando24, at NHL Russell, at JW Paterino. For all your rain news, at Kopitar4HOF. If you want to gamble a little bit, DraftKings code, it's THPN. They're matching your first deposit. Get in there, make some money, or try to make some money at least. If you guys want your t-shirt here, let me throw up here this code here if you're watching. But we're good. $30, sizes small through extra large. All orders should go through contact@hockeyroyalty.com. Once Russell gives you the go-ahead that those shirts are available, Venmo is @HockeyRoyalty is where we're taking the money. Please, we put a lot of heart and soul into these t-shirts. I hope you guys like them. Mine are being sent this way, and I'll be wearing them as soon as they get here. Appreciate everybody in chat.
We'll tweet out more details and stuff on them and have them on the site and everything too.
Yeah, appreciate you guys in the chat. Oh, you guys are rocking. Don't forget to like before you guys pop out of here and enjoy the rest of your night. Please subscribe. Tell your mom, tell your grandma, tell your girlfriend. Just, hey, get on their phone and click subscribe without them knowing, because we appreciate everything you guys do. Over 800 subs. We went from 700. Our goal was 1,000. We went to 800 in 1 week. I think that had kind of to do with your tickets that you gave away. Hopefully we have more giveaways going forward this season. Kings are on a road trip coming up. We're going to have everything, all the ins and outs coming out that. Hopefully we get some points because the Kings are rolling and the return of the Kings is no fluke. So thank you and go Kings go.